Hello and welcome to the Personnel Today Friday podcast. I'm Tara Craig and I'm joined today by Louisa Peacock and Richard Staines. Coming up, we discuss Personnel Today's 2010 budget breakdown, what the Chancellor's plans mean for employers, and we hear about the increasing number of strikes taking place in the UK and their implications for the workplace. But first the news. British Airways has cancelled travel benefits for staff involved in the recent cabin crew strikes. The airline has said it does not plan to reinstate the benefits. The first national rail strike in 16 years will take place at Easter. The RMT and TSSA unions have called 4 days of strikes, starting on the 6th of April, when most workers will be returning to work after the holidays. The number of workplace conflicts in the UK will increase as the country emerges from the recession, according to Employment Relations Service ACAS. Job uncertainty, low engagement levels and loss of trust have been identified as key figures in triggering conflict. You can read these and other news stories in full on personaltoday.com. Richard, you've been looking into strikes this week, with the most obvious example being the industrial action staged by the British Airways cabin crew. Apart from the BA strike, what other industrial action is taking place at the moment?
Well, there's the RMT rail strike, which is now scheduled to go ahead over the Easter weekend over job cuts and safety. There's another threat by the RMT on the London Underground to go on strike. There's continued action by the Public and Commercial Services Union over... This is civil servants and they're in dispute over redundancy and terms and conditions. Also the PCS workers at Hewlett-Packard, they've gone on strike over pay and job losses. And the British Gas dispute with the GMB union over fitting time for boilers.
Okay, so most of these seem to be about pay and benefits. There's talk of a perfect storm situation where we might end up with strikes right across the country. What would it take to cause this and what should employers be doing to prevent it?
I think the major concern is the public sector recession, which hasn't really happened yet, where there's a risk that the next government could decide to make some very deep cuts into public services. And public sector organisations where workplaces are highly unionised. And there's also the continued economic problems, even though the economy is supposed to be recovering. There are a lot of companies out there that are still in difficulties. So these factors could come together to create a very volatile industrial relations situation.
Okay, is there anything HR should be looking out for, should be bearing in mind?
Well, I spoke with Ed Sweeney, who's chair of ACAS. He said the economy was still the main problem. He also warned of potential wildcat strikes organised by social media and text message, which are very difficult to deal with. But overall, he said that prevention is better than cure, and he urged HR departments to be honest about what changes need to be made and work with unions to resolve problems as they arise.
Has there actually been an increase in the level of incidences of official industrial action?
Well, between July 2008 and June 2009, ACAS dealt with 948 collective disputes, and that was a 15% increase on the previous year. And there was also some Office for National Statistics showing that industrial stoppages increased in October 2009, causing the loss of 175,000 working days, which is the highest figure since summer 2008.
Okay, so basically we could have a real problem on our hands, and as you say, it's a case of prevention rather than cleaning up afterwards.
Exactly. I think companies must really work hard to ensure that if there are going to be difficult decisions made, that they are honest and do not attempt to hide them from workforces. This could just make matters worse.
Okay, thanks Richard. Louisa, the big story this week has, of course, been the budget, and particularly significant given the imminent general election. Personnel Today looked at it very much from an HR angle. What did you think were the main points for employers, and in particular for the HR function?
Yeah, thanks, Tara. The Budget 2010 did indeed contain some measures to help small businesses grow post the recession, and it touched on how the public sector would attempt to claw back spending. As we know, the UK economic deficit is now £167 billion. That was confirmed in the budget. So obviously a huge challenge ahead there for HR teams as they look at how to cut spending across departments and local authorities. But on budget day, we did a live blog and we had lots of people from the industry and HR profession commenting on that blog. And the real sort of general consensus was the Chancellor perhaps didn't go far enough to alleviate employers' concerns over rising taxes, for example, long-term unemployment and skills shortages.
Well, we put together a budget breakdown. That's on our website. What did you see as the main points in that?
Yeah, like you say, on our website, we've got a raft of measures, really, that came out of the budget, from taxes, public spending cuts and how that would affect HR specifically, unemployment, public sector pay and pensions, employment law, the list goes on. I think a couple of things I want to pull out today, one of which is taxes, really. I think that was a big thing that all businesses were looking out for. And indeed, the Chancellor confirmed the 50% tax rate on earnings over £150,000. And perhaps one of the bigger things is that he confirmed he will go ahead with the 1 percentage point rise for national insurance in 2011. A lot of businesses, including the CBI, which represents employers, were expecting or hoping that the Chancellor would perhaps freeze that rise in 2011. But no, that's definitely going ahead. And that will affect all employees who earn 20 grand or more. The Chancellor also confirmed proposals for restricting the higher rate tax relief on pension contributions. I guess one slight piece of good news for small businesses was the no increase in capital gains tax. So that will help some businesses starting up especially. But like I say, a lot of sort of heavy taxes that perhaps were expected but were just at least confirmed in this budget wasn't great news for business.
I mean, one of the big things that people have been talking about is of course public spending. You know, what did they say in the budget about cuts?
Well, perhaps unsurprisingly, the Chancellor didn't go into huge detail about how to make efficiencies. He did nevertheless say that all departments would outline how they were going to cut costs the very same day. And true to form, they did. Within a couple of hours, all the major departments outlined spending cuts. The Department of Health being the biggest one, with something like £4.35 billion it plans to cut by 2012-13. Something that was announced in the budget as part of measures to save money includes the relocation of London's civil servants to rural areas. So the Chancellor said a third of London's civil servants will relocate over the next 5 years. But already employers were saying actually perhaps this is a bit of a false economy because you're going to have to pay relocation costs and probably redundancy costs for those staff that don't want to relocate. So as to how much money that will actually save and contribute towards the masses of billions of pounds that need to be saved, we're not sure. But during Personnel Today's live blog, employers again weren't really convinced that the Chancellor went far enough to address the massive spending deficit. Steve Coventry, the head of the manufacturers body, the EEF, actually posed the question, did Darling do enough to convince the markets that he has a credible plan to reduce the deficit? And he answered it, probably not. He added that there were bits and pieces in the budget for business, but overall, not a lot to look forward to. Gillian Hibbard, the former PPMA president, which represents public sector managers, and also HR director at the Buckinghamshire County Council, actually said on our live blog, I'm starting to feel a ray of optimism for the public sector. And she said there's no further cuts in public spending announced. So even though, like I said at the beginning, perhaps we weren't expecting detail on public spending cuts, for the former head of the public sector body to actually be surprised that there was no details on spending cuts, I think that pretty much sums it up.
What about public sector pay? That's something that people have been talking about a lot as well.
Yeah, nothing new on public sector pay or pensions, only confirmation that public sector pay settlements would be held at a maximum of 1%, so a cap on public sector pay for the 2 years from 2011. But again, some commentators said, you know, he didn't go far enough to protect jobs. Yeah, but again, employers weren't convinced the Chancellor went far enough to help protect jobs in the public sector. Charles Cotton, the CIPD's reward advisor, basically implied that by not having a freeze on public sector pay altogether, so a 0% pay rise, it will actually cost the service jobs. So the fact that he's gone for this 1% cap just isn't enough. He called for a freeze in the overall pay bill.
Okay, and in terms of employment law, did anything come out around the default retirement age?
Again, Tara, I'm afraid nothing new came out, only confirmation that the government is considering scrapping the default retirement age, as we know anyway, or raising it, which is possibly more likely, to something like 70. But a final decision on that is expected in the summer. You see, what you're probably noticing with this entire budget is that, as you said at the start, it is just literally weeks before the general election is called, and it was, in fact, a very pre-election budget. There weren't a raft of new measures in there. The Chancellor probably did the best with what he could, considering the huge deficit that's the country now faces. And really, it was just the budget saying, you know, hang on tight, we're in there, we're doing all we can. But there weren't any new measures or new ideas necessarily to spark the economy.
Yeah. So basically, the only surprising thing about the budget really was the tax on cider?
Yeah, and the stamp duty, which apparently, the stamp duty threshold being raised to 250 grand, which apparently was nicked from the Tories anyway. So we'll have to see, you know, on those matters. But in terms of employers, yeah, nothing really new. It was quite a damp squib.
Okay, thanks, Louisa. We've talked quite a bit about the public sector having to make huge spending cuts. Tell me about HR's role in that.
Yeah, well, we spoke to several public sector professionals who work in HR as a result of what happened both in the budget, but also, of course, it was the big public sector people management conference last week, the PPMA's annual conference, where lots of people, again, were talking about the kinds of targets, savings targets needed, and, you know, called for a radical rethink, really, of how public services are run. Obviously, we know that frontline services are going to be protected as much as they can, and a lot of this falls on back office in terms of how can we work together in the back office to reduce overlap, and that includes using projects like shared services and outsourcing. But of course, with shared services, it's not just sharing services within your own body, but also going out, if you're a local government or local authority, going out to the police or to fire, emergency services in your area, and sharing services across the whole area, which really has the potential to save tens of millions of pounds.
Tell me about some of the reactions.
Yeah, well, Richard Crouch, who's the lead on organisational development at the PPMA, and he's also the HR director at Somerset Council, he told Personnel Today that the kind of savings targets being talked about does indeed mean a fundamental rethink about the role of local government is needed, what services are, how they're provided and how that's done. He said that HR could not afford to hang around and should act now to establish shared services across local authorities, as well as helping to redesign service delivery and staff terms and conditions.
You can read all of today's stories in full on personneltoday.com, and keep a lookout for our next issue coming out on the 30th of March, which includes a feature on what a Conservative Party general election victory would mean for employers. Well, that's it from this week's podcast. Thank you for listening. Remember to go online to check the latest news and views from the HR community at hrspace.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.